Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Today, we celebrate our one-year anniversary of ModPath Chat. On behalf of Modern Pathology and USCAP, I would like to thank our audience and guests for making this podcast series such a success. In our first year, we have enjoyed thousands of downloads and a most rewarding social media engagement. Keep it that way. A virtual cheers to all. So let's focus on today's business. In this 30th episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by two experts in the field of gene pathology, Dr. Natalia Buza and Dr. Pei Hui from Yale University. They will share with us their experience and educational pearls on the role of genotyping in the diagnosis and prognostication of gestational trophoblastic disease. It's a topic that we don't deal with every day, but nevertheless, a very important topic. And our guests have taken it a long way and from the beginning of doing some molecular diagnostics for that. So thank you, Natalia and Pei, for accepting my invitation.
Thank you for having us today.
Yes, thank you, George. It's a great pleasure to be on this episode and share with your listeners our perspective on gestational trophoblastic disease.
Excellent. So let's start, and any of you can tackle these points in any order you wish, but it will be a good idea for our audience to give a little primer on what are these molecular underpinnings that position gestational disease and gestational tumors to be exploited by molecular diagnostics.
All right. I think that's probably a topic I want to give you a first answer. Some little bit background. So I think, quite common in academic medicines, you're challenged with a clinical problem. Then you ask a question, followed by searching for an answer. So some 20 years ago, when I came back from Memorial after my fellowship, I was just starting to sign out on the GYN. At that time, the diagnosis of molar pregnancies was quite difficult and problematic for two reasons. So number one is that the molar gestations are now evacuated in the first trimester and often actually before 10 weeks of gestation. Therefore, the clinical and the pathological features of molar pregnancies are not so well developed and quite overlapping with many non-molar gestations, making the diagnosis quite challenging. Number two is that the diagnosis of molar pregnancy at that time is primarily based on the histology with very limited ancillary studies to help with. One of the ancillary tests used by many is the DNA ploidy analysis. If it turns out to be a triploid, then it's considered as evidence of partial mole. But you know that this is quite problematic as the mere presence of triploidy is not really equivalent to partial mole, as estimated a third of triploid missed abortions are actually non-molar. So You can see the demand for improvement is obvious. However, I think we know very well the pathogenesis of molar pregnancies was well established back to early 70s. and complete mouse inherits only the one paternal genome, and the partial mouse inherits one extra paternal genome, like one haploid paternal chromosome set. The question is so obvious, why we cannot use this genetic information to improve our diagnostic accuracy? At that time, I was looking at the literature, and actually, indeed, there were a few proof of concept research papers on the topic, but there were no really good clinical validation papers. So I remember actually back to 2005, Jennifer Hahn, that then at the MGH, was helping me setting up this STR genotyping for tissue identity testing to resolve the tissue contamination floater issues for general practice. However, soon I finished the validation for that purpose, the resolving power of STR genotyping in ascertaining parental genetic composition is so powerful and obvious that this would be an excellent answer to the question for the molar diagnosis. Excellent.
Very well put. So just for our audience, STR short tandem repeats and the same technique that you use in transplants, in bone marrow transplants, and identity testing, and you found the benefit of applying it. So my understanding, it's probably better to your review that really the focus of today's podcast deal with two different applications within gestational diseases, the hydatidiform mole that you were talking about, but also separately in gestational tumors where these genotyping techniques have benefit in prognostication and diagnosis. So let's start with the first, with partial mole versus complete mole. How do you, in your day-to-day practice now, and I refer our audience to a great algorithm in the paper that you put, what tests do you order? How do you navigate that diagnosis, knowing what you just said, that up to a third are really can be triploid and not hydatidiform mole? So any one of you can answer that question.
Natalia, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I can certainly go ahead. So I would also comment on one of your earlier points, George, that these are rare diseases. I would say that actually products of conceptions are very common specimens in the histology lab and in GYN pathology. So we do see a lot of these, and oftentimes the morphologic features of the chorionic villi raise suspicion for partial or complete mole. And as Pei alluded to, partial mole is the one that is particularly problematic. You know, for a complete mole, that can also be difficult, especially if it's a very early complete mole when the villus hydrops is not well developed. You don't see that much trophoblast hypoplasia. So you really have to have a high index of suspicion based on other features such as the myxoid hypercellular villus stroma. Compared to partial moles that have a lot of mimics that are non-molar, you know, where the villi have an irregular contour, they may have some trophoblast pseudo-inclusions, a little bit of hydrops, and enlargement. Those features can be seen in a variety of non-molar gestations, such as trisomy syndromes. They are probably the most notorious mimics. You know, mm-hmm. trisomy 21, mm-hmm. 18. Also, other conditions less commonly as uniparental disomy of chromosome 11, or just simply a non-molar hydropic abortion for degenerative reasons or other unknown reasons. So there is definitely a lot of morphologic mimics, and the algorithmic approach you mentioned can be used in a variety of ways depending on the resources. Since we have the genotyping available here, what we typically do is any type of morphologic suspicion for a molar gestation, we go directly to genotyping, and that will give us the exact genetic answer. Is it a diploid androgenetic only genome that's a complete mole, or is it a diandric monogynic triploidy that's a partial mole? An added benefit is that oftentimes trisomy syndromes can be identified or at least suggested based on the genotyping result, although the panel doesn't include all of the chromosomes, but it does include most of the chromosomes that are commonly involved in trisomy
syndrome. So it's more like a one-stop shop by going right. The genotyping, the STR first.
Right. And then there are other ways to apply the algorithm if you have the immunohistochemistry available, but not genotyping, then you could start with immunohistochemistry for P57. And depending on the results, you may be able to confirm the complete mole if there is absence of P57, or if P57 expression is retained, then you need to go for an additional step, you know, to do genotyping to rule out a partial mole.
So at least you triage the ones that P57 are lost, and you can stop there. And a lot of our audience is international, maybe in places where genotyping are not available. So that's I think it's very helpful to look at this great algorithm. Appreciate it. Very, very well done. So we can anything else you want to say about the algorithm before we move to the trophoblastic tumors?
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, I think before we move on to the tumors, just still within hydatidiform moles, I would say that the genotyping will also provide, even for complete moles, although you can make the diagnosis with immunohistochemistry only, but genotyping will give you the additional information, whether it's homozygous or heterozygous. And a recent study led by Pei and a couple other prior studies also showed that there is prognostic significance. Heterozygous complete moles have a higher risk of persistent gestational trophoblastic disease or subsequent trophoblastic neoplasia.
Excellent. So not only diagnostic, but prognostic when you establish the complete high data formal. Thank you. So let's move on to the gestational trophoblastic tumors, and maybe Pei, you can tackle that. My understanding is there it has a role in telling is this really gestational versus other origins as germ cell tumors, or we all know carcinomas can have a choriolike differentiation. So. Take it for us and guide us. And there is a similar algorithm for that that you shared from your experience.
Yes, sure. So I think there are two points that probably relates to this question. Number one is about the diagnosis, to establish a correct diagnosis. Number two is about the prognosis. Let me talk first about the diagnosis. I think in the recent 3 or 4 years, we encountered at least 3 cases of such where young patient. Actually, it's another Modern Past paper published just a couple of years ago. 3 young patients, I think they are in the 40s. They presented as primarily as a pulmonary tumor, single or multiple nodules. And these 3 cases really enlightened us about the importance of correct diagnosis. It turns out all presented at the emergency room with chest pains or even a pulmonary failure. And the 2 diagnoses turns out to be a gestational related. One is related to partial mole. The other one is actually related to remote term pregnancy. The other one was, the third one is really illustrating in the ways that it was presented as a single pulmonary nodule. I remember it's about 9.3 centimeter. And she, although she was a heavy smoker, but was not, at that time, the diagnosis came from the general practice setting and was considered that actually it's a lung primary. And they subject these tumors for next generation sequencing. They didn't find any mutations. And they did RAS and ALK FISH was turned out to be negative. So it turns out actually that that time a GYN consultation was made. And I believe this is actually Natalia was the first to lay the eye on it. And it was suggesting, well, we need to rule out, actually this could be metastatic choriocarcinoma. So at that time only actually serum FCG was ordered. It turned out to be elevated over 300. So how to confirm it? It's actually, for us, it's quite easy with the genotyping. You know, all gestational tumors inherit the unique paternal alleles, which is different. You won't find it in the patient herself. So it's a very simple application. You apply the genotyping to the tumor, compare with any normal tissue of the patient. You compare them.
And so you normal and tumor pair. You do genotyping.
Yes, you pair them up. You clearly will see the unique paternal alleles in the tumor. That is the ultimate confirmation of a diagnosis of gestational neoplasm. And also gives you the hint, what is the antecedent pregnancy giving rise to that tumor, which is also very important. That relates to my second answer to this. So we also encountered early times, this was almost about 6-7 years ago, a 22-year-old young patient presented as clinically as ectopic pregnancy. They went in, tried to evacuate the ectopic pregnancy, only found out that actually it's a very solid necrotic tumor involving the broad ligament and ovarian surface. And so that was a suspect actually at that time. You said, okay, on the frozen, even permanent, said, wow, this is a choriocarcinoma. Again, the question arises that, well, yes, it's choreo. Could that be a gestational arising from ectopic? Or this could be a germ cell tumor. So how to answer that question? I don't think you can answer that question by morphology or by immunohistochemistry. Again, the only ultimate answer to this question is DNA genotyping. Same principle, looking for the paternal unique alleles in the tumor. But in this particular case, turns out actually the genotyping of the tumor matches perfectly to the fallopian tube. That is essentially confirmed actually. This is a germ cell, pure choriocarcinoma.
Wow.
So yeah, so first making a
that would be impossible to guess because the first thing you would guess.
Absolutely. And this actually was a paper a long time ago with Natalia as the first author in the EastJIP journal. So making this diagnosis ultimately very important. We know the the prognosis treatment options for all three possibilities: gestational choriocarcinoma and germ cell tumor, and somatic carcinoma with choroid differentiation. These are drastically different animals. Clinically, you treat it quite differently. The prognosis also differently. So this is a very instrumental observation of three cases in recent history, at our practice.
Another great Modern Path paper to refer.
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. Very, very well put. So then the second part is that you started touching on what is the origin of that and prognostication.
Yes. So as I also alluded to you, making a correct diagnosis is very important. Because separating gestational chorion from non-gestational chorion, that actually calls for different risk assessment and treatment options. For somatic carcinomas, germ cells is completely different treatment options. And it doesn't involve actually so-called WHO or FIGO, gestational trophoblastic tumor scoring, risk scoring scheme. But for gestational, we have to rigorously follow this scoring system into a high-risk group and low-risk group. Mm-hmm. But however, to achieve that, there are five or six parameters you have to look into it. Two of which, number one is the antecedent, the index gestation. Number two is the interval time between the tumor development and index gestation. That's the interval time. The problem is that, and nowadays, the post-molar tumor diagnosis, often we don't have a tissue diagnosis because clinically, clinicians follow the patient by serum HCG. Mm-hmm. If serum HCG keeps rising or plateaued, they're treating as a gestational trophoblastic neoplasia. They're going to treat accordingly with chemo without actual tissue diagnosis. So with this setting, in many cases, like the three cases, as I mentioned, presenting in the lung tumor, we really don't have the accurate knowledge about antecedent pregnancy if patient has multiple gestations. Actually, one of the cases turns out to be the truth. Truth is that the patient arrived, the tumor, a metastatic chorion, arose from a term placenta some years ago.
Wow.
So that becomes crucial because if you don't know the antecedent pregnancy, the index pregnancy, you cannot determine whether the tumor arising from a complete molar pregnancy, partial molar, or complete from arising from a term placenta. It has a completely different risk scores. And also without that knowledge, you don't have an accurate time interval to integrate into your scoring system. So here comes another play by genotyping. Genotyping can precisely identify the number one, the index pregnancy. Number two, once that is established, you can accurately assign the interval time for the tumor. Therefore, you can have an accurate score. Gestational choriocarcinoma. And then that will determine whether the patient is receiving a single agent chemotherapy for low-risk choriocarcinoma or multiple agents for a high-risk counterpart.
Fascinating. So not only diagnostics, it's guide therapy and management,
yes.
Similar to other great stories in where molecular diagnostics more and more and leading us to more precise precision pathology approach. Great. Anything else? Where do you see... you think the field matured? What's your both of you take on this? Is this how these two algorithms probably not going to change for a while, or is there something you're preparing in your lab that you're gonna it's gonna impact how we do these things in the future?
Well, I think there's a room for future improvements. So, for sure, if genotyping was available at more institutions, that would certainly help the accuracy. And I think another key point is, moving forward to when assessing the outcomes and the clinical implications, we have to use the precise techniques for future studies, because I think when you look at the literature from the older papers, it's really not all the studies, even the clinical studies, were based on accurate genetic information. Even the risk scoring system. I was thinking, as Pei mentioned, the WHO or FIGO scoring. Basically, even what we know about the in time interval from the index gestation or the index gestation itself, those studies or those data are really based on prior observations that were not always using precise genetic diagnostic methods. So I think there's a lot of room for future studies to look at precisely classified patient cohorts and see if those older observations still apply or whether we need to change anything in that.
So are you referring to more like harmonization and standardization of what sets of STRs, what approach and techniques? Because if they're variable, then you can't really compare. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So give Natalia's background, just I think I want to add two things. One is that if you look at the field, actually after we actually published our clinical validation paper back to 2008 or 2010-ish, I think after which in the next decade, I think multiple academic institutions have actually adapted genotyping for routine practice and also commercial operations. I know even now, the ARAP and NeoGenomics they are running this test for a while. I think if you look at the field now, I think it's a relatively mature. I think there's no doubt that the genotyping is the gold standard in the diagnosis and classification of molar pregnancies. I think that's it. But how, as Natalia alluded in the algorithm, I think their improvement depends on the resources and your demand clinically. The other I wanted to point it out, if you look at the WHO Blue Book, this newer one, 2020, so WHO is now advocating the importance of ancillary studies, including genotyping, in diagnosis of molar pregnancies and the prognostic stratification of tumors. In particular, I think the WHO advocates that for a definitive diagnosis, partial MOS, you need DNA genotyping. So as you can appreciate, I think the field is just moving to the front of using genotyping, not only for the molar pregnancies, but also for the gestational trophoblastic tumors.
Thank you. Very, very helpful. I just, since you mentioned the WHO, I want to inform our audience that Pei is on the editorial board of the Female Genital Tract WHO Blue Book, 4th and 5th edition, and both of our guests contributed to the Blue Book. So we really could have not picked better experts to share with us today's episode. So thank you, Natalia and Pei, for accepting, for doing this. And for those who are yearning for a deeper dive, I refer you to their comprehensive review on the topic that was just published, I think, online in June in Modern Pathology. So Natalia and Pei, it has been a pleasure to have both of you here as my guest, and hope to see you in future episodes with being the prolific authors that you are to for our journal.
Thank you, George. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It was a great pleasure.
Excellent. So long.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.